Module 5, Examination Basics. This module covers what happens during the examination of the application. Office actions are at the core of the examination process. You'll learn about first office actions, second office actions, and final rejections. Then you'll briefly see ways to respond to office actions and make amendments to the application. Applicants may be able to apply for an extension of time if they're having difficulty responding to an office action. Learn the ins and outs of extensions of time. It isn't always possible to communicate clearly through mail. Therefore, an applicant may be able to schedule an interview with the examiner assigned to their application. The examination of an application may take years, but there are a few options for speeding up the examination of a patent application that we'll touch upon in this module. Ultimately, an application will either be abandoned or allowed. Learn the details of each, along with specifics on patent terms. Office actions. As stated before, the PTO thoroughly examines each application that comes their way. Every application is examined by an examiner knowledgeable in the subject area of the claimed invention. The examiner checks for novelty, non-obviousness, and utility, checking many other details. Once an examiner has scrutinized the application, he or she will decide if it needs to be changed or if it can be allowed. If it is allowed, it will issue into a patent. If it needs changes, then the examiner will outline all the issues with it and send out a first office action, which basically serves to state that the application has been rejected. The examiner will explicitly state under what grounds the application is rejected in the office action. After receiving the first office action, the applicant will have a specified length of time to correct all the problems and send in an amended application back. If the deadline passes and the reply is not sent in, then the application will be abandoned. If the applicant sends in an amended application to the PTO, the examiner will once again review the application. If problems still remain with it, the examiner will send out a second office action. In this case, the applicant must again respond within the allotted time period with their revisions. Once the applicant sends their revisions back to the PTO, the examiner will review the application a final time. This time, the examiner will either allow the application to patent, which means they'll send out a notice of allowance, or they'll send out a final rejection. Now, there are times when the prosecution may be much simpler and the application may be allowed without having to go through a first and/or a second office action. Although it's rare to be lucky enough to receive a notice of allowance on the first try, it can happen. Alternately, the final rejection may be sent out at an earlier stage, skipping the first and/or second office action depending on the state of the application. Since the majority of patent applications will receive an office action, how should an applicant reply to one? First of all, the response must be in letter form. This letter should distinctly point out and address each and every error and either argue it or amend it. Above all, the applicant must not include any new claims relating to new matter in the reply. What they should do is present arguments pointing out specific distinctions in the claims or in the overall application that might help overcome the examiner's rejections. We will discuss these details a little later. Final rejections. A final rejection is sent out when the examiner decides that the examination should not continue any longer or if a rejection remains after the applicant replies to the second office action. It basically serves to indicate you're out in the patent rejection system. Applicants have a limited amount of time to respond to the final rejection. If they choose not to respond, then the application will be abandoned. And it should be noted that a final rejection may be sent out as a first, second, or final office action. For example, if the examiner receives a ridiculous patent claiming an invention that is already common knowledge, so there's nothing new about it, then a final rejection might just be sent out right away. Examiners will not go through the motions of an examination when it is blatantly obvious that the application will never, ever stand to gain a patent. It might seem a little harsh, but that's the way it goes. So after the final rejection has been sent out, the applicant will usually have 3 months from its mailing date to send in an appropriate reply, or the application will be abandoned. The possibilities for replying after a final rejection include the following 3 options. The first is that the applicant may file a notice of appeal. When a final rejection is appealed, the application will be reviewed by the Patent Trial and Appeal Board. This board will decide whether the examiner was correct in rejecting the application, or they will overrule the examiner's rejection and allow the claims. The second option is to file a response that places the application in condition for allowance. This may be done by canceling certain claims or by making the amendments that were suggested by the examiner. Lastly, the applicant may file a request for continued examination, or RCE. In order to file an RCE, a bona fide attempt at advancing the examination must be included. The PTO won't tolerate just dredging things along for no good reason. Amendments. Once an applicant receives an office action, he or she may need to make amendments to the application. Amendments are always allowed after the first or second office action. In addition, they may also be accepted even before the first office action has ever been mailed, provided certain conditions are met. Amendments that are sent in before the mailing of the first office action are termed preliminary amendments. These amendments may be made after or at the time the application is filed. Preliminary amendments filed along with the application are only acceptable when they are used to cancel some of the claims. Otherwise, the amendments must be incorporated into the application. One reason an applicant might want to cancel their claims is because the filing fee is calculated based on the number of claims. An applicant may be ready to file their application, and they realize they can't afford the filing fee due to the number of claims. Therefore, they might opt to cut out a few of the claims in order to lower the required fees. The PTO will usually accept preliminary amendments up until the first office action is completed. An examiner doesn't want to rework a finished first office action due to the applicant's procrastination. There are a couple of other times an amendment may be sent in if certain conditions are met. One of these is after the final rejection has been mailed. This is only acceptable if the amendment places the application in condition for allowance or in better shape for an appeal. As you might guess, it's even more frowned upon to send in an amendment after the notice of allowance has been mailed. In these cases, the applicant will have to explain why the amendment was not sent in earlier, and even then, they may or may not be taken into consideration by the PTO. We've alluded to this fact before, but amendments may not ever include new matter. Material not disclosed in the original application may not be added in later. There are more than a few examples of just how strict the PTO is on this matter. Deleting a step from a method in the claims will be considered new matter and therefore will not be acceptable. Adding specific percentages or compounds that the disclosure did not originally contain is also not allowed. Instead, you may add new matter into an application by filing a CIP application. The PTO gets picky with what they consider an acceptable format for amendments. For example, if you have to make amendments to both the claims and the specification, each of the 2 sections should begin on a separate sheet. Furthermore, amendments are never partially entered into an application by the examiner. They are always entered in their entirety, or not at all. Amendments to the claims are the most complex, but there are specific rules required for amendments to any section in the application. These help streamline the process and serve as a record for what has been changed in the application. Extensions of time. Ideally, all applicants will want to take filing their reply to an office action seriously, but there are times when the allotted period to reply just isn't enough. Fortunately, applicants may be able to extend certain reply periods. There are two different types of periods for reply that examiners may set. The first is called a shortened statutory period, or SSP. These periods for reply range from 1 to 6 months. All responses to a shortened statutory period must be filed within 6 months from the mailing date of the office action. This 6-month time limit may not be extended any further. If the applicant misses the 6-month deadline, the application will likely be abandoned. For example, if the examiner sets an SSP for 2 months, the applicant may send in an extension of time and possibly gain another 4 months for a total of 6 months. If a 6-month SSP is set, the applicant will not be able to extend the period for reply any further, and the reply will be due when the SSP expires. The second type of period for reply is a reply for a specific time limit. These may be extendable for an additional 5 months. That means the applicant can gain an additional 5 months on top of the original due date. Therefore, if the examiner sets a period for reply at 2 months, the applicant may file an extension of time and gain an extra 5 months for a total of 7 months. There are instances where the due date may not be extended at all, such as when the office action explicitly states that the time period is not extendable. In addition, extensions are never granted for applications involved in reexamination or interference proceedings, as well as replies from the Patent Trial and Appeal Board. Petitions for extensions of time always require a fee, and in many cases, the more money paid, the longer the period for reply may be extended. To make things even more complicated, there are two basic types of extensions. Remember, earlier we were discussing the two types of periods for reply. The first type of extension is an automatic extension. An automatic extension must be filed before the reply period has expired. So, if the examiner sets a 2-month SSP, you can't file a reply by then. You may immediately file an automatic extension to try to get an extra 4 months. The second type of extension is called an extension for cause. These may be used when the applicant has already let the original time limit expire, or in cases where an automatic extension is prohibited. Interviews. It may be difficult to correspond with the PTO via mail only. Often a discussion between an applicant and the examiner can help advance prosecution and identify patentable subject matter. When an interview could be helpful in advancing the prosecution, the PTO will allow interviews in the form of personal appointments, telephone conversations, video conferences, or email. The applicant or the applicant's power of attorney may be involved with these interviews. When a face-to-face interview is granted, it must be held on the office premises unless authorization has been granted to hold it somewhere else. Normally, these face-to-face interviews will take place in the examiner's office, a conference room, or the video conference center. There are only certain times during the prosecution that interviews will be granted. An applicant will never be granted an interview before the first office action has been sent out, unless that application is a continuing or subsequent application. However, after the first office action has been sent out is a much different story. Applicants may be granted interviews after any office action. They are not generally granted after a notice of allowability has been mailed. The PTO always has the last word when it comes to granting interviews. The applicant may merely initiate a request for one. If the interview is granted, the applicant or the patent practitioner will need to file an interview summary form, which will be recorded in the application file. This form should include the relevant application particulars in addition to what exactly was discussed, whether an agreement was reached, the results of the interview, and the examiner's signature. Speeding up the examination. When an applicant files a non-provisional application, it is usually examined when the PTO gets around to it. There are many different departments handling different classes of inventions, like biotech, chemical, mechanical, and more, and applications will be further classified to an individual examiner who will examine the application on a first-come, first-served basis. Certain departments are so backed up that it may take well over a year, and in many instances much longer, for the applicant to receive just the first office action. That means the entire examination process can often take several years. But there are a few options for speeding this up. The first is by qualifying for a petition to make special. The application may qualify to be made special, and if it meets the criteria, it will be examined before the usual first-come, first-served queue. These will be granted in cases where the applicant is 65 years of age or older, or is in bad health. In addition, the criteria for a petition to make special may also be met if the invention will enhance the quality of the environment, serve to counter terrorism, or help with the conservation of energy resources. There are other possibilities for qualifying as well. These will generally require a fee in addition to meeting specific criteria. In other instances, the application may qualify for the Revised Accelerated Examination Program. There are many requirements for this program. Just a few criteria for the Accelerated Examination Program include that the application cannot have any multiple dependent claims. In addition, it must be filed electronically, and it must contain a support document. Basically, the applicant must do more work to get the application in shape to qualify for expedited examination. The goal of this program is to complete the examination of the application within 12 months from the filing date of the application. Another method for speeding up the examination of an application is to request prioritized examination at the time of the filing. This was implemented by the America Invents Act and is a newer process, the goal of which is for the office to examine each application in the program within 12 months. Applicants must send in a fee as well as the proper documents in order to qualify for the prioritized examination program. In order to qualify, the application must not contain more than 4 independent claims, more than 30 total claims, or any multiple dependent claims. And this is just a general overview of the options available for speeding up the examination of an application. There are many more specifics involved in this process. Abandonment. The long, difficult road through patent prosecution often ends in abandonment. When an application is abandoned, the prosecution will be closed, thereby ending the hopes and dreams of a prospective inventor as far as gaining a patent on the invention is concerned. Abandonment happens for a number of reasons. The applicant or patent attorney may formally abandon the application, or they may accidentally abandon the application. This occurs when the applicant does not take the appropriate action within the allotted time period. There are many situations that can lead to abandonment. These include a formally expressed abandonment by the applicant or by the attorney or agent of record, a failure of the applicant to take the appropriate action at some stage in the prosecution of a non-provisional application, the failure to respond to an office action, the failure to pay the issue fee, or when the normal time period for a provisional application has expired, which is 12 months after its filing date. There are actually two different routes to abandonment, In the first route, the PTO rejects the application because it isn't appropriate. There may be a fatal mistake or the subject matter is just not patentable. And the applicant decides he or she can't fix the error and just lets the time to reply expire. Eventually, the application will become abandoned. This is termed abandonment for failure to reply within a time period. Let's use Sarah's case as an example. Sarah has a great idea, but she doesn't quite express it completely in the specification. So the examiner sends out a first office action rejecting the application. If Sarah were on the ball, she could have rewritten the specification to make it more complete, but she's not. Discouraged by the office action, Sarah lets the time to reply expire. In this instance, the PTO will simply abandon the application. The second type of abandonment is known as express abandonment. All that is needed here is for a written declaration of abandonment to be sent in by the applicant. This declaration of abandonment may be signed by the applicant or the patent attorney or agent of record. Once that declaration is sent in, the application becomes abandoned. There are always exceptions, even when dealing with abandoned applications. It can sometimes be possible to revive an abandoned application. However, this is only a possibility if the application was abandoned due to a failure to reply within a certain time period. If you expressly abandon an application and then change your mind, you cannot revive the application. In addition, the delay in reply must be unavoidable or unintentional, and some sort of evidence to prove the unavoidable or unintentional delay must be included. These petitions must also include a reply, a fee, and any necessary terminal disclaimers. A terminal disclaimer disclaims part of the patent term in lieu of the accident that left the application abandoned. For example, if an applicant unintentionally abandoned his or her application and 3 months later filed a petition for unintentional delay, the PTO may subtract the time the application was abandoned, which is the 3 months, from the patent term. The PTO always has the last word in determining the type of evidence they will find acceptable on behalf of either a petition for unavoidable or unintentional delay. Generally, the PTO will require a listing of the events that transpired to avoid the error resulting in the delay. In addition, a listing of the training and experience of the people who caused the error should also be sent in. Under no circumstances will the PTO allow an applicant who just wanted to hold off on patent-related expenses to revive their abandoned patent. Allowance. It's the letter you've been dreaming of, the coveted notice of allowance. Only those lucky few ever receive it. After gasping for air and collapsing in a nearby chair, what do you need to do next? First of all, just make sure there aren't any final corrections to make. Once the patent issues, it will become a costly and time-consuming matter to correct the spelling of your invention's name in the title or some other unsightly error. After double-checking that everything is in order, all that's left is to send in the issue fee. The issue fee must be paid within 3 months from the date the notice of allowance was sent out. There is no chance of extending this time period. It's set in stone. After this fee is paid, it will all be over and the patent will finally be granted. Now, just for fun, exactly what happens if the applicant is so busy living it up after receiving the notice of allowance that they forget to send in that issue fee? That's not such a big deal, is it? Sorry, but this is definitely a problem. The PTO will abandon the application if this fee is not paid. However, in the event this happens, it may be possible to revive the application, pay the fee, and make things right. The applicant will need to follow the rules for reviving an application in order to make this work. That means they need a legitimate excuse as to why the issue fee was not paid. Here's another hypothetical situation. After checking the paperwork, just what if the applicant realizes there's a sizable mistake in the application? For example, what if he or she finds a publication showing that one of the claims really isn't new at all? This violates the duty to disclose all relevant information to the PTO. That could really cause problems down the road. In this case, is there any way to withdraw the application from issue? Fortunately, there is. The applicant may file a petition to withdraw from issue, which must include a good reason for withdrawing the application and must also include a fee. Alternately, the office always reserves the right to withdraw an application from issue if they decide later on they made a mistake. Patent terms. After all that hard work, the applicant has been granted a patent. They plan to pay the maintenance fees on time. So, how long does an applicant get to keep the rights to exclude others from the subject matter in the patent? It seems like it should be forever with all the hard work that went into gaining the patent. But it's hardly true. The term for plant or utility patent starts on the date the patent issues and ends 20 years from the date the application for the patent was filed in the U.S. Although that statement sounded simple, it's not. You'll want to pay attention here. The 20-year countdown actually begins on the application's filing date, not on the date the patent issued. That means if it took 3 years for the patent to be examined, which is very realistic, you would only have 17 years from the date the patent issues left on the term. The point is, the PTO starts counting immediately after the application is filed. After all, the subject matter will be protected even during the patent pending period. That's why it's very important for an inventor to start marketing their invention immediately after the patent application was filed. If a plant or utility application contains a reference to an earlier filed application, the patent will expire 20 years from the filing date of the earliest filed application. That means a continuing or divisional application will expire 20 years from the filing date of the parent application, which could significantly cut the patent term. Design patents run off a different schedule. Design patents expire 14 years from the date the patent is granted. So for these, it doesn't matter when the application is filed. You only need to consider the date the patent was granted. Patent terms may be adjusted under certain conditions. One circumstance that may result in an adjustment to the patent term is when the PTO takes too long during the prosecution. The PTO has now implemented a 3-year policy. If it takes them longer than 3 years to examine the application, the patent term will be extended. For every day over the 3 years that it takes to examine the patent, the term is extended by 1 day. Note that this rule only applies to utility and plant applications. In addition, it only applies to the original application, not to continued applications. The patent term is also typically adjusted if the patent is delayed by a derivation proceeding, an appeal, or a secrecy order. In addition, the patent term may be adjusted due to time spent waiting to gain government regulatory agency approval, like when the FDA has to give approval for a drug or therapeutic agent.